Ambiguity and Distinction, Historical and Cultural Dynamics.
ਹਜ਼ਾਰੇ ਦੀ ਕੰਧ ਹੋਵੇ ਤੇ ਸੋਨਾ ਭਾਵੇਂ ਨਾ ਹੋਵੇ, ਮਾਇਆ ਗੈਰਤਮੰਦ ਹੋਵੇ ਤੇਰੇ ਕੋਲ ਕੋਲ ਜਾਂਦੇ, ਤੇਰੇ ਨਾਲ ਉੱਠਦੇ ਬਾਂਦੇ, ਬੇਵਫਾ ਨਾ ਬਣਦਾ ਅਸੀਂ ਠੋਕਰਾਂ ਨਾ ਖਾਂਦੇ।
You can find voices like this one anywhere on the streets of the subcontinent, around the cars stopped at the signal lights, at the Sufi shrines and in the marketplace. The most distinctive elements one can observe about them are the flamboyant gaits and their characteristic claps. They are commonly perceived as men dressed as women. These are the Hijras, a community of people in the subcontinent who are described variously in scholarly and popular literature as eunuchs, transvestites, homosexuals, bisexuals, hermaphrodites, androgynes, transsexuals, and gynamimetics. And if this multiplicity of terms was not enough, they are also referred to as a people who are intersexed, emasculated, impotent, transgendered, castrated, effeminate, or somehow sexually anomalous or dysfunctional. The fact is that there are so many words to describe them that the subject of description has become an amalgamation of various overlapping terms. I am Sayyed Kazim Ali Kazmi, and I am a part of the research group on ambiguity and distinction at the University of Duisburg Essen. The sub-project titled Unveiling Orientalism, Gender and Ambiguity in 18th Century British Discourse on Travel is headed by Professor Dr. Patricia Plummer. We, as a group, are interested in Orientalism in 18th century British travel literature and instances of ambiguity observed by the travelers who visited the Ottoman Empire and the connecting regions. Our engagement with gender and ambiguity has led us to detect perceptions and representations of genders in multiple overlapping and transnational perspectives. That is why we begin with the perceptions, representations, and ambiguities in the binary representations of the gender and multi-layered existences of other gender identities that challenge these binary constructions. Vijay Lal's article on Hijras appropriately opens with the complex and multifaceted conditions of Hijras, who are also referred by Serena Nanda as neither man nor woman. Neither man nor woman can be read as a more ambiguous expression of the difference, even though this non-binary state also refers to their problematic categorization as the third gender. This categorization can signify their ambiguity within the context of the subcontinent. In principle, one can be a hijra or one can become one. This gap between being and becoming is the gap we explore by engaging with the debates about gender, sexuality, performativity, and ambiguity. This ambiguous position of being neither one nor other has sparked the researchers to create a problematic third gender category. This category deals with the hijras in either or scenarios. For example, one is either born a hijra or one can become a hijra afterwards by the realization that the soul of the individual does not correspond with the body. This is where the ambiguity of this gender lies. In addition to that, the Eurocentric context of using the terminology of the LGBT community for the hijras begs for a re-evaluation as well as renegotiation of these terms within the identity construction mechanisms. Therefore, it is deemed relevant to probe into the hijra identity and relate with it other similar but fundamentally different identities on the global scale. This is where we, as a research group, read ambiguity and engage with the question of gender construction. This difference of being and becoming is explored by Lakshmi Narayan Tripathi in her memoir titled Me Hijra, Me Lakshmi, which was published in 2015. Lakshmi was identified as a boy at birth and she belongs to a noble high caste Brahmin family. He narrates his interaction with a Hijra named Shabina long before her parents knew about her decision to become a Hijra. In these words, she looked every bit like a woman from head to toe. Everything about her, her speech, her gait, her mannerisms, her voice was so feminine. I knew at that very moment that I yearned to be like Shabina. I learned everything about Hijras from Shabina. She acquainted me with their history, their traditions, their lifestyles, and their sources of income. The reference here to history and traditions is specifically related to the subcontinent and the holy place the Hijras enjoyed for many centuries. From time immemorial, as researcher Vijay Lal would put it, from this time immemorial, the Hijras have been an integral part of the subcontinent society. Lakshmi also points towards the fundamental difference which sets the Hijra identity apart from the other gender forms in the way the members of the community define themselves. The Hij of the word Hijra is referred to be meaning as the soul or a holy soul. The carrier body is the Hijra. But this carrier body also needs a ritual to become a Hijra. This is known as Reet in the city Thane, which is in the Indian state of Maharashtra. This is the area where Lakshmi comes from. It is a short ceremony that marks their Jogjanam. From the information so far, one could imagine Hijra as a transgender, a cross-dresser, or a drag queen, because there are the most similar categories created in the West for the people who don't conform to their genders at birth. When Lakshmi, herself a Hijra, speaks English, she uses the word transgender for herself, but only because there is no better in the English language to signify what she is. During the engagement with the Hijra identity and its construction, one comes across one important but not mandatory milestone for achieving the Hijrahood. This is the castration and emasculation of the individual who wants to become a Hijra. The act of castration seems to put the Hijra identity quite close to, and it is often confused with, the castrato who were trained to be singers in Italy, and later some of them appeared on the London stage during the 18th century. Their arrival on the stage was mostly a result of the aristocratic musical taste. Similarly, eunuchs were another identity of individuals who were created through emasculation and employed as the guards of harem in Ottoman Empire. These emasculated men were of predominantly African origin and remained in the service of the Ottoman rulers until its fall in 1924. These three respective identities span over the centuries and across empires. One of the most famous of these castrated men was Farinelli, who arrived in England in 1734 and who is described in these words by Charles Spurney. Everyone knows who heard or has heard of him. What an effect his surprising talents had upon the audience. It was ecstasy, rapture, enchantment. Long before Farinelli came to England, Charles and Cillian had already categorized the types of eunuchs into three groups in a book he published in 1707. Anne Greenfield notes that the earlier decades of the 18th century saw 25 productions featuring eunuchs on the London stage, in which the action of the performance was set in the Turkish, Indian, or the Persian royal courts. Anne Greenfield also pointed out towards the sheer number of plays variously depicting the eunuchs in these Orientalist performances. Then she concludes, in light of the complex and at times sympathetic treatment of these sexual and cultural others, it is tempting to view Orientalist descriptions of eunuchs as progressive steps towards today's culturally inclusive world. After all, these plays found a place for the queer other at the time when castrated men in real life were regularly treated as medical and sexual oddities. Yet, in some ways, this analysis of Orientalist eunuchs also underscores something surprising about our own world by comparison. While modern-day acceptance towards the queer other in many ways has never been more inclusive, in the case of the concept of eunuchs, we are perhaps less at ease than we ever have been before. During the 17th and 18th centuries, eunuchs would have carried a fraction of the shock value they hold today. As historians now acknowledge, it has only been in the last 100 years or so, at which point eunuchs largely disappeared from the royal courts globally, that the world has not been accustomed to seeing eunuchs. Marmon also calls them an Indian male cult, the member of which think that asceticism and renunciation of sexual desire are proven by total castration and emasculation in an operation called Nirvana, a term for the state of mind where the individual is liberated from the finite human consciousness and is approaching the dawn of higher consciousness. In antiquity, eunuchs also enjoyed a similar space and status. In this subcontinent, the castration for a hijra serves a spiritual function as well as a rite of passage, but it is not considered a mandatory ritual. This is one of the reasons the hijra identity is read by us more ambiguous than the other identities. It is fundamentally more ambiguous, multifaceted, and culture-specific because one can be married with children and be a hijra, as is noted by Gayatri Reddy in her book titled With Respect to Sex, Negotiating Hijra Identity in South Asia.